Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here. Welcome you back to the show this week. And I'm in a really, really good mood tonight, guys. I sat down just a little while ago to pull up my notes and get ready for the show. And I just noticed that we are now 13 days away from FP1 at the Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne on March 12th, race day Sunday, March 15th. And that is absolutely awesome. It seems like an eternity ago since we had the last Grand Prix of 2019 at in Abu Dhabi. And all of a sudden, it seems like those past 3 months have just disappeared rather quickly. I mean, it's been a very long time, don't get me wrong, but I'm very, very excited now that things are really ramping up. Real racing is only just a couple of weeks away. We're in the middle of the second test in Barcelona. So it's a great time of year, and I really can't wait. If I had a time machine and I could fast forward, well, at least till this weekend and get to the weekend, that's a different story. If I could at least fast forward beyond that, I would pick March 12th to go and see what happens when we get to Australia, and especially when we get to the 15th of March. Well, racing starts again and it gets interesting, it gets fun. And the big question will be, can anybody beat Mercedes? But that question will have to wait for at least another 2 weeks. And until then, there is plenty of things to talk about as always. There always is. It seems like it's been a busier than usual off season. I don't know if that's just my own perception or if there has been more news, but it certainly seems like it's been less boring. I guess that's the best way to put it. It's been less boring the past couple of months, even around Christmas and New Year's, which is always a really, really quiet time. I mean, we put out a couple of shows during that time, but there was still the odd bit of news trickling through, which seemed a little bit at odds over previous years. But then again, maybe that's just me, and it usually is, so I wouldn't read too much into that. Anyways, before we get into the actual racing news this evening, the coronavirus, which has been obviously a major concern over the past several weeks, since the new year, obviously it has affected Formula One. What with the cancellation of the Chinese Grand Prix in Shanghai in April is still causing concerns. But however, F1 and Chase Carey, the CEO of Formula One, says all systems are go for the Vietnamese Grand Prix, which is set to go on the 2nd to 5th of April. In just over a month's time. Obviously, Vietnam, very close proximity geographically anyways to China. But anyways, Carey says that the event is going ahead as planned. And but he did acknowledge that the effects of the coronavirus situation, as more and more cases seem to be popping up in different countries around the world, he describes as fluid. So hopefully they will not have to be postponed. But the CEO of the Vietnamese Grand Prix had the following to say just earlier this week, quote, "Preparations for the race are going according to the set schedule. The F1 race in Hanoi in 2020 will take place as planned. We are, of course, monitoring the situation closely and will notify customers and media should there be any changes." Chase Carey also weighed in on the situation, saying, quote, "We do plan to proceed with the race. I talked to our Vietnam partners yesterday, and I plan to stop in Hanoi on March 16th on my way back to London from Australia, and all systems are go. Obviously, a country like Italy wasn't really on the radar a few days ago, and now it is. By and large, it's a process. What we're doing is actively engaged with all the events upcoming, I guess particularly the more current ones, to get perspective from within the countries. Some of it is logistics. Bahrain just added restrictions for people coming from a number of cities. Part of what we can plan is to make sure we have flexibility and options in place to look at logistic issues in getting to and from races. Other than China, I guess there's a particular focus on the races at the beginning of the year. We're heading to Melbourne, heading to Bahrain, heading to Hanoi. Although, to state the obvious, we've got to see what evolves in the coming days." So, like I said, of course, nothing is more important than people's health, but hopefully the situation with the coronavirus is solved soon and it becomes contained. And at least from a Formula One point, I sure hope that the only is the Chinese Grand Prix that is postponed. And hopefully they are able to squeeze it in at the end of the season, like they were talking about a week ago. Like I was saying last week on the show, I find that a rather an ambitious statement from Formula One, considering the schedule is absolutely jam-packed this year. And if they manage to pull it off, you know, all credit to them. Okay, well, sticking with more coronavirus news, the Ferrari factory, which is in Maranello, is in the region of Italy that has been affected by the largest outbreak of coronavirus in Europe. And the team has decided to, they're basically shutting everything down. They've decided to restrict all non-critical business travel and limiting access to their factory in response to the number of cases that have been showing up in their part of the world. This is nothing unusual. I have a lot of friends that travel internationally for business, and I know several of them have had non-essential business trips canceled to Europe in the past several days. Of course, the coronavirus is very limited in where it is, and you know there's obviously concerns why it's popping up where it is. And I think, you know, again, you just have to stay safe. Anyways, Ferrari in a statement had to say, quote, "Ferrari has defined precautionary measures to manage the current coronavirus alert. As requested by local authorities, both Ferrari museums in Maranello and Modena have been closed, and the company has restricted access for employees that are resident or have visited the affected municipalities. The company has also suspended all, until further notice, all external visits, including factory tours, as well as non-critical business travel. The situation is being monitored closely. New measures will promptly be implemented and communicated should they become necessary." So there you go. Anyways, let's get away from the depressing news and let's talk now about Formula One itself. I'm going to kind of stick with some of the back end stuff because I think it's interesting and kind of relevant too, just before we get into the real meat and potatoes of the news this week. Anyways, we were talking last week again about the proposed Formula One race in Miami. It's like they had cleared some of the hurdles there with Dade County and the city of Miami, but it seems that it's not really going to plan. And Chase Carey has said, quote, "clearly taking longer than we hoped," in reference to getting the race there. They've been facing all sorts of opposition. They've tried to locate that race in a couple of different locations in the city, and most recently the last several versions have been in and around Hard Rock Stadium, which is the home of the NFL Miami Dolphins. And well, you know, honestly, this isn't really too much of a surprise. Again, I'm all in favor of having a race there. However, it has to be done responsibly. It has to be done properly. You just can't go and do that because, I mean, where Hard Rock Stadium is, right in the middle of a residential area. And while it must be a big inconvenience every time the Dolphins are playing, you know, when you have tens of thousands of people converging for an event, you know, you're going to get hundreds of thousands of people over the course of a couple of days for the race itself, plus all the impacts pre and post race and the setting up and breaking down of it. So it's got to be done right, especially when it's in and around a residential area. And, you know, I've been covering Major League Soccer for a number of years, and I just know just from past experience monitoring the situation and watching the news about the group headed by David Beckham to try and get a team, Major League Soccer team, down in Miami, and all the hurdles and all the problems that they had to go through and resolve before they could find ground for a stadium and get that all squared away. And it took years and years and years. So as disappointing as it is to see, you know, so much, you know, problems to get the second U.S. race off the ground. Again, it's not really a surprise based on, you know, all the problems that they had to get Major League Soccer. Of course, you know, it's apples and more oranges. It's two different completely things, or different things. But I'm not really surprised from that point of view, although Formula One seems to be, you know, they do seem surprised. And a major event like that, you just can't push it through. They're going to have to go through all the steps to do it. Anyways, Carey had to say, quote, "we knew the U.S. was going to take time. On one level, yes, it has clearly taken longer than we would have hoped. I think it's frustrating on one level because we've spent as much time as there seems to be always some degree of ongoing complexity. I think the reality is that the U.S. for us to really build it It's a 5+ year time frame. We said all along the U.S. isn't going to change our world in 2 or 3 years. The goal is really in 5 to 10 years from now, the U.S. becomes a meaningful market for us. In that context, 12 months isn't that big a deal, but that doesn't mean it's not frustrating as you continue to go through it. End quote. So obviously, he's just talking about the situation in general, but considering it took David Beckham and his group, what, 7, 8, 9 years, whatever it was to secure the land for a stadium and get that all set up and then actually be able to take that to the people of Major League Soccer and be granted a franchise and all that. I mean, it was pretty close to a decade. Should it take that long for Formula One? Hopefully not, but who's to say? We're not really in the on the inside. I mean, they're going to have to meet all sorts of requirements to do that. And well, who knows? We have no idea how long it's going to take. All right. Well, moving along to the next piece of news. And well, this is an interesting one because it concerns the financial well-being of Formula One. And apparently the F1 group has made a profit for the first time in 3 years. And so in 2018, Formula One's income rose from $1,827 million to $2,022 million, which was like just over $2 billion. Seems a bit strange, the numbers that I've written down here. But anyways, it's a lot of money. Anyways, they posted losses of $37 million in 2017, $68 million in 2018. And last year, that's modest compared to some of the numbers that they'd lost in the previous 2 years. But in 2018, the group made a profit of $17 million. And well, that's very, very good to see. At least it's going around. So the increased revenue that the recent fall in the income paid to the 10 teams has been reversed. And this is just at a time when the discussions for the new Concorde Agreement are still ongoing. Anyways, the teams earned between them. Now, this is mind-boggling. This goes back to 2016. So the teams earned between them $966 million. That dropped to $919 million in 2017 and then $913 million in 2018. And last year, now get this, they shared a pot of just over $1 billion. So that is a lot of money. Anyway, so their improved performance was led by a boost in their primary revenue, which was derived from broadcast fees, sponsorship, race hosting fees. And well, that's interesting. If you look at the breakdown of the major places where the revenue is coming from, broadcast, this is not surprising. That's 38% of their revenue. Sponsorship, a large portion, is 15%. But race hosting fees, which always seems to be a big bone of contention, or maybe not a bone of contention, but it does get brought up specifically. I'm thinking of Silverstone as one place. I mean, the previous deal that they'd negotiated with Bernie Ecclestone, there was this sort of sliding scale in the increase. But however, having said that, apparently only 30% of Formula One's revenue came from race hosting fees. I thought it would have been a lot higher than that, but interesting nonetheless. It is good to see that at least on the balance sheet that Formula One is healthy, and we'll have to see over time how the numbers continue to increase. So that's very, very good news. All right, so well, let's move along now. We've talked to quite a bit about some of the behind the scenes news in Formula One. So let's talk now. There's a lot of news and things to discuss that have come out over the course of the past week or so in winter testing in Barcelona. You know, I look at the pictures there, and winter in Spain and Barcelona and Catalonia is obviously a little bit different than winter here in Vancouver, Canada. Although obviously here on the wet coast, it is not nearly as cold or icy or snowy as basically the rest of the country. We just get our snow in liquid form, so therefore rain. Just getting back to the serious part here. So some of the, I think it's been interesting to see some of the results that have been coming back from winter testing. It's really, really different than this time last year. I mean, we'll talk about some of the times that have been posted over the past couple of days as the second winter test has just recently gotten underway. But last week, there were a couple of items that that really came out from the first session. One of them is just the way that Ferrari's underperformed. They had an engine failure. The big one is this dual-axis steering system that Mercedes has seemed to surprised everybody with, and that's completely blown up and become a real thing. The one item that came out that was a failure in Sebastian Vettel's car that has now been traced to a lubrication system issue, and the team says it's actually not a cause for concern. I mean, they've been a little bit underwhelming in testing, but you can fast forward or rewind, I should say, to this time last year when they were blowing everybody away in testing by about a second or a second and a half to lap. It was all just a false positive, because by the time we got to Melbourne in the middle of March, they were well off the pace and remained there for basically two-thirds of the season until after the summer break, until they really found lightning in a bottle. And then, well, we had that engine controversy later in the season, and they sort of regressed to where they were at the start of the season, which they said was not engine related, but that's a bit of a different story. Anyways, there was the team noted that the problem they had in the power unit last week was completely stripped and checked back at the factory in Maranello, and the fault was traced to a non-structural problem with the lubrication system. And they said, as I said already, it's not a big cause for concern, and they're already working to correct it and get it sorted out. So, I guess it is what it is. Ferrari, they seem quite casual about the way that winter testing is gone for them right now. Mercedes has actually been questioning Ferrari's assessment of their performance in winter testing so far. And when you kind of look around and see some of the news that come, last week Ferrari was understated. To put it mildly, they were 2.6 seconds off the pace last week, and they did say, well, part of it is that they had no intention to go out there and chase the fastest time or top performance in the opening week. A lot of people were surprised, and myself included, that they were that far off of the pace. And Mercedes, they were in a kind of similar position last year. There were kind of questions. Is the W10 is it a bit of a lemon? What's going on there? And then they managed to get it turned around, and they came in to start the season, and they completely blew people away. When they got into testing, the car just didn't really perform as they expected it to. And if you go back and see what a lot of the quotes were from people like Toto Wolff or James Allison or Lewis Hamilton, they were quite frank later in the year and after the season was over, that it really took a long time for Mercedes to really understand the car that they had. And once they could understand what the car was actually like to drive and how it was performing, then they knew what they needed to do with it. So perhaps Ferrari is in a bit of a similar situation, and we'll have to see what happens. Anyways, Sebastian Vettel had to say, quote, "You can play around a lot with engine modes, etc. I think right now the target is not to prove the maximum power of the engine. The target is to do as many laps as possible. I think then ramping up the engine and so on, it's probably not something you want to do in testing, and certainly not show everyone. It's not on the agenda as far as I know." Mattia Binotto, team principal at Ferrari, had the following to say, and just to add it on to Sebastian Vettel's thoughts. Quote, "We changed the approach to testing and the program. We focused the first session, so all three days, in trying to map the car in various aero configurations, various mechanical configurations, without trying to optimize the setup and look for overall performance. Our competitors are apparently very strong, but I think we should not forget the history of the last year, and let's wait for the first week in Australia to better understand the true picture," end quote. And I think that is a very, very good piece of insight from Mattia Binotto. And with different teams doing different things and really on running their own program when it comes to winter testing, we really don't know how they compare to one another, because one team might be focusing on one thing, another other team might be focusing on something else. Even if they are focusing on the same area of the car, they might be running different tires. They might be running heavier fuel loads, and they may be pushing the car harder than compared to another team. So who knows? We really won't know until we get to qualifying. I guess even a free practice might give us a little bit more indication once they really try to get the car set up for the race itself. But of course, when it gets really serious in qualifying and the race itself, it will be, the proof will be in the pudding, right? We will know for sure how things have worked out and where everybody is. Anyways, Ferrari did say that Mercedes are wrong about their engine performance, and Matteo Binotto has basically dismissed the comments from Mercedes that they were running their engines at a different level to their customer teams in the first test last year. Sorry, pardon me, last week in the first test at Barcelona. Mercedes, so the question that they put out there was, why has Ferrari spent this test running their power unit consistently at much lower levels than their partner teams? When motorsport.com put that question to Mattia Binotto, he had the following to say, quote, "We believe that we are not the fastest car at the moment, so I think on lap time we will be behind at the start of the season. What are we lacking? The car of this season compared to the one of last season is overall faster, but we are faster in the corners, slower on the straights. This as well was an objective in designing the car. We knew last year that we were too slow in the corners, so we tried to put as much downforce as we could on the car to make it as fast as possible in the corners. But now we are paying for it on the straights. I think still in terms of overall balance, set up slow speed corners, it's something where we need to improve. But that's part of the job and the task for this week." End quote. So again, I think that's an interesting admission from Mattia Binotto that he's admitting, straight up that they don't think that they have the fastest car at the moment. And again, he's really reiterating and emphasizing the philosophy that they put into the design of the car this year is to really focus more on downforce, because that was their Achilles heel last year in 2019. I mean, they were faster than anyone on the straightaways. I mean, look at how Charles Leclerc was able to stay in front of the two Mercedes cars in Italy. I mean, he was able to keep them just far enough behind, and especially on those long straights that you get at Monza, and was able to hold them off and secure a memorable win. I mean, that was the win. I mean, we all knew that Charles was going to be a rock star last year. I mean, we just knew that this guy is something special, but that really elevated him to a different level in the eyes of the Tifosi after that memorable win at Monza. But that was all down to the straight line speed of the car, because the Mercedes cars would be able to close the gap, but as soon as they came out of the Parabolica into that long start finish straight, they were able to get pretty close. Even if they were in a DRS range, they were able to get pretty close, but not quite close enough to try and make an overtaking maneuver. And then by the time they get to Redafilio at the end of the straight and go into that chicane, that quick right hand and then left hand turn, it just didn't really work out for them. So again, interesting to see Ferrari just come out and say that they are having these issues, and basically it is due to the fact that the design on the car is completely different from last year, and they still have a ways to go before they can really maximize the performance with it. Anyways, time for a very quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. Please don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
513 declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. So just moving away from Ferrari for the moment, we're going to get back to them again very shortly. But in all the news that is really focused on the lack of anything special from Ferrari in winter testing thus far, and this dual-axis steering system that has been implemented by Mercedes, has kind of overlooked another issue that Mercedes has had to work out during testing so far, and that is the fact that they have had some issues with their own engine. And it looked like everything was just going absolutely perfect so far. But it's come out just recently that Mercedes have had some reliability concerns and was forced to make an engine change. So, I mean, last week, they being Lewis Hamilton, Valtteri Bottas, were fastest overall in testing, topping the times on 2 out of 3 days. And, well, I mean, that's pretty ominous when you see that their challenge for this year, the W11 is just fast as heck, straight out of the box. And well, I mean, it just actually didn't turn out that way. I mean, there have been some issues, and this has come to light. And well, apparently their engine chief, Andy Cowell, has admitted over the winter that the development has not been without drama of this new engine. They've been working on a lot of improvements across the entire power unit on the ERS side, on the internal combustion engine side. And well, he said, as ever, quote, "we are fighting a few little issues as we pull everything together," end quote. So, well, what are a few little issues? So he said, basically, they're putting a lot of work into building the right specification of the engine, getting it run, and then getting all the power units to all their, well, not just the works team, but all the customer teams as well, so they can do what they need to do. And then last week, Nicholas Latifi, the Williams rookie driver, lost track time in testing when he lost his power unit, which required a change. They're actually, Williams is on their third engine so far. I mean, they've been having a lot of problems, and that is surprising. Well, we'll talk about a little bit later, because they are pretty much bulletproof, the power units that Mercedes build. I mean, they've been very, very reliable over the years. I mean, they've had the occasional issue with them. I mean, the one that immediately springs to mind goes back all the way to 2016, when Lewis Hamilton was chasing down Nico Rosberg in the World Championship towards the end of the season. He's leading quite impressively at the Malaysian Grand Prix, and his engine really, well, it obviously it led him down that weekend, but that was one of the turning points in that season, because Rosberg, he was kind of really managing the season at that point, not really risking anything more than he needed to. He knew that that Lewis was fighting back hard in the championship. I mean, by the end of it, I mean, he only won the championship by a mere 5 points over Lewis Hamilton. And well, I mean, obviously Lewis didn't collect any points on that afternoon, and it was all down to a failure of his engine. So that that was surprising. I mean, if you go back just to last week, so the Mercedes power teams, which is the works team, Racing Point, Williams, over the course of the first 3 days of the test, they ran just shy of 1,200 laps, which is just about 400 laps per team. So you compare that to the Ferrari teams, which is Ferrari, Haas, and Alfa Romeo. They ran just about 1,100 kilometers each, which is about 300, works out to about 365 laps per team. And then Honda, being the Red Bull and AlphaTauri teams, They ran, well, a lot less, only about 850 kilometers. And Renault, being Renault and McLaren, they ran less, even more. They just ran over 800 kilometers. So anyways, interesting to hear that Mercedes have been fighting with some issues. I mean, it is interesting, too, that it seems that it is just Williams that have been suffering with the lack of reliability at the moment. Like I say, you just do not associate anything negative when it comes to Mercedes, either their cars or their engines. So that is a bit of an anomaly that we're going to have to keep an eye on over the next several days as they go through the second test of Barcelona. Now, let's talk about this dual axis steering, because this really came out. And of course, after I did the show last week, I actually hadn't really had much of an opportunity to go and really view any of the footage for winter testing. And lo and behold, as soon as the episode came out, all the news about this DAS really literally blew up, and it's been pretty much a big issue ever since. So this is what's been called leaving their rivals wide-eyed, starry-eyed, stunned, whatever you want to call it, ever since they really caught everyone literally by surprise over the past week or so. Anyways, Alain Parman, who is the Renault sporting director, said there is a question mark over the DAS under the Parc Fermé rules are. He was very impressed just about the system and how innovative it is. And basically, this dual axis steering, what happens is if you push the steering wheel in, it tows the front wheels in, pull it out, it tows the wheels out. And basically what it does is it affects how the car steers through the corner. So, I mean, there's been a lot of different comments. Sebastian Vettel's weighed in on this, Alex Albon, a lot of different people. We'll get to all of them. Anyways, Parmani, he was saying, quote, "I think we were a little bit wide-eyed about what it is doing, how it's doing it. Like most people, I think we did a bit of video analysis. We don't know what it's doing, I guess. James Allison and his men have done something clever, and undoubtedly they think there's plenty of lap time in it. Obviously, Mercedes have clearly found something that they think is a benefit, and I think that's one of the rather wonderful things about Formula One." Yeah, so legality one way or another, safety issues one way or another, it is one of those things that I think that we all love about Formula One and just how innovative it is. Ferrari saying, well, this is nothing new. We thought about employing this system ourselves. Anyways, before we talk about that, Valtteri Bottas feels that that this is going to be a thing, that everybody's going to want one, but he really feels that his rivals, all the other teams in Formula One, are really going to struggle and find it very difficult to copy this DAS that Mercedes have come up with. And he was saying that the first time he heard about the development was about a year ago. So, I mean, of course, these things don't come in overnight. I mean, they've been working on it for a very long time. And he said, it's a really cool thing. It's really good that they're the only team that's running this kind of system at the moment. And then he goes on to praise the team, and he's saying that that it's just another indication of the very brilliant people that Mercedes have. And well, again, he says he figures that even though he's known about it for a long time, that that it's going to be very difficult for the other teams to come up with something as good as an effective as they do. Anyways, Sebastian Vettel, he had to weigh in on DAS, and he believes that the system would be uncomfortable, is the word that he used to describe how it's work or how it works. And Vettel had to say, quote, "I have seen it, and we talked about it at lunch, and it looks interesting. I guess the fact that they are running with it means that it is legal. I don't know. It is called a steering wheel, not a push or pull wheel. I don't know if it works. I guess there is quite a lot of work to bring it to the track. It is probably not as easy as it looks for the driver to work with it, but we will see. For sure, it was a novelty for us to see." Yeah, and again, if you see the drivers in the car, I mean, they're doing everything that they need to do, and you see them push it and pull it. But again, these are very, very talented drivers, very talented people that are in the car, and they've got all the different switches and dials and buttons and everything that that they can change the way that the car works on the track, and they can do all these amazing things there. So is it that uncomfortable, is it that cumbersome or difficult to use? I don't know. You'd have to ask Lewis Hamilton or Valtteri Bottas. I mean, Bottas himself doesn't seem to, or at least publicly, is not saying that it's a very difficult system to use. And I guess the big... how do you want to say that? The big clue as to how effective the system is how soon it takes other teams to come up with their own system and put it on their cars, because usually that's the thing that's a real indication in Formula One. If it's good and it works, then everybody wants one. They'll have their own system before too long. So if we see other teams copycatting and putting it on their own cars, then we'll know exactly how effective it is and how much of a difference it's actually making for the guys on the track as they're going out there. Anyways, like I was saying just now, Ferrari actually considered a DAS style system in the past, but that was something that they actually never went to put in the car. And then Mattia Binotto had to say, quote, "The DAS system is something we considered in the past, but we didn't design and develop. The reason why is the legality matter, which we didn't clarify with the FIA at the time. But secondly, because we believe it's not worthwhile, at least for our car and our car concepts. We are looking at what others are doing at the moment. It is really a question. It really is a question mark. I'm not sure we will develop it." And yeah, I mean, that is exactly what I was just speculating on a moment ago. If they feel like it is really worth it, then they'll put it on their own car as everyone else. But Alex Albon, the Red Bull driver, he had to weigh on it as well. And he called the whole DAS system sneaky. And he believes that, if you feel like you've got an advantage, you're not really going to come out and say anything. I mean, people are going to find out in Formula One regardless, right? But so I don't know if they're being sneaky on purpose. I just don't think you show your hand. I mean, obviously it's not poker, but again, you don't want to tip your rivals off to any advantage that you have. Albon said, quote, "Maybe would haven't seen it so early in testing. It is quite nice to have all these onboards and all that. But at the same time, I think nowadays they have photographers everywhere. I think maybe we would have known about it and you guys would have. We are speaking about it with the team, just how they would feel just as a driver moving the steering wheel must feel very strange," end quote. So again, Albon, he's echoing the similar sentiments and thoughts that Sebastian Vettel was just about the whole system and what it's like to drive with. And I guess the only way to answer it for them is to try it themselves. Ferrari, just going back on the whole legality of DAS, has decided that they want clarification on the issue. I think that is no real surprise, because if it turns out that that it's legal or not legal or safe or not safe, Ferrari just want to know. And of course, this is no real different than the whole question about the legality of Ferrari's engine last year and all the clarifications and technical directives that came out, because, you know, people were raising a bit of a stink about that. And Binotto had to say, quote, "I've seen that there's a lot of discussion about it. Personally, myself, I didn't really look at it in detail what it is about, but I think we will trust fully the FAA. I'm pretty sure that they will have already done the right decision, or they will do it, but I completely trust what the FAA will judge. Are we discussing with the FAA? Not yet. We will do for clarification. Important for us to understand, but as I said, we will not challenge the FAA on their decision, because we trust them fully on what will be or has been the decision on that." So yeah, again, I think everybody needs to know, because he was fair in the previous comment. He was pretty straight up. It was basically, there was two issues on it. A, was it legal? And the second issue was, and more importantly for them, was, well, even if it was legal, it didn't really work with the concept of the car. So what was the point of putting all the time, effort, and money into developing a DAS or a similar system for their car when it wasn't really fitting in with the plans for what they're doing? Anyways, even though it seems that the system is legal, DAS possibly could be on the wrong side of the Parc Fermé regulations. And like I said, I mean, it's being given all clear by the FAA on the technical side, on the rule side. I mean, they haven't breached any rules. I mean, they've who's to say we really get into it if it's really a loophole or anything like that, a bit of a gray area. I mean, they got the green light for it, and that is the most important thing. But it is is interesting because going back to what Alain Parman was saying from Renault, you know, just the whole park for May question mark about it. He feels that the detail lies in the steering system or suspension system. The two in the technical regs are defined differently, and that's where the detail is. So, I mean, the sporting regulations for Formula 1 dictate that a car is under park for May conditions the moment that leaves a pit lane during qualifying and the start of the race, so you can't make any changes on it. And Article 34.6 of the rules in Formula 1 add, quote, a competitor may not modify any part on the car or make changes to the setup of the suspension while the car is being held under park for May conditions. In a case of a breach of this article, the relevant driver must start the race from the pit lane and follow procedures laid out in Article 36.2. In order that the scrutineers may be completely satisfied that no alterations have been made to the suspension systems or aerodynamic configuration of the car, with the exception of the front wing, whilst in pre-race park fermé, it must be clear from the physical inspection that the changes cannot be made without the use of tools. So interesting, right? I mean, they come up with this very, very brilliant system. It's ruled okay by the FIA in general, but then it comes down to a question just about the park fermé rules. So, anyways, F1 race director Michael Massey has declined to elaborate on the specifics of what's going on with the Mercedes system. He said that that they won't discuss the individual team's technical elements, and went on to say that that they've got a query from a team. Then they'll deal on it on a one-by-one basis. So there you go. I guess we'll find out one way or another, but that would be kind of a bit of a shocker, to say the least, that even though that the system may be legal in one way and maybe not another, wouldn't it be a shocker if it it does actually violate the Parc Fermé rules, and you could see Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas starting from the back of the grid? I mean, it seems... Well, I mean, it would be very Formula One, right? It always finds a different way to surprise us dramatically one way or another. Anyways, just talking now about the safety aspect of DAS, the FAA, just in looking at it, they say that there's no questions on over the regards of the system to safety. And they say that that it is safe despite what they call an unusual amount of movement in the steering wheel. And then again, this is from Michael Massey, F1 race director. He said, quote, I think from the FAA perspective, at the end of the day, safety is our number one element. So there's no questions regarding the safety side of it. Rest assured that this is the highest priority from our side. End quote. So again, there's so many different things to look at with this DAS, and how long it stays on the car. That is another question. Clearly, Mercedes think it's a big deal. But again, one of the other different discussions that have come out is that even though it's different, there's the discussion whether it's comfortable, whether it's safe, that that there are people warning out there that that they shouldn't shut it down, and that development like this are good for Formula One. And I absolutely think so, and I agree with that. I mean, when you see some of the trickle-down technology that that reaches you know, regular road-going cars that we all have, be it ABS or traction control or anything else. I mean, a lot of us have paddle shift on our cars. I've had on my car for a number of years. I mean, it's a cool innovation, and actually makes driving a little bit more fun when you can use the paddle shift on the back of your steering wheel. But I mean, that's a different aside. Anyhow, I mean, that really what it is when it comes to Formula One. In my opinion, and I'm sure it is the same for many of you, Formula One is supposed to be the pinnacle of motorsport. While I think it's a very fine line to define as to where you decide where it goes too far in terms of how much you put into the hands of the driver and control of the car and drive aids and whatnot. I mean, that is a very legit discussion and debate to have, because even though you don't want to make it too easy for these guys when they're out there, you want to make sure that it's as difficult out there, because it's supposed to be an extreme environment. I mean, it's supposed to be the best teams, the best cars, the best drivers in the entire world going literally to all four corners of the over the earth over basically three quarters of the year, it's an extreme thing to do. I mean, they really are pushing people, machinery, and everything to the limit. And I think that innovation and design and all those things in Formula One, regardless if it comes trickle down to us, the general public, in some watered down form, you know, that's really cool. But you can't take the innovation out of Formula One. Like I say, there is a fine line to where you draw the line between the drivers and the driver aids. But again, don't take that out of Formula One. You don't want to stifle that creativity. You don't want to stifle that innovation. And hopefully we see more of it. I mean, that's what Formula One is all about. You know, if it's going to be the best racing series in the world, the top dog, if you will, that these sorts of things are necessary. You got to be the best in all categories. Anyways, DAS is not the only thing that Mercedes have up their sleeve, and we'll talk a little bit more just again after a very quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away, we'll be back in just a moment.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. Yes, as I hinted at just before the break, that the DAS is not the only change that Mercedes has made for this year. James Allison, technical director at Mercedes, had the following to say, quote, "We decided that we would make a car that was aggressive. Despite the fact that there were no change in the regulations, we would take every part of the car and see if we could challenge ourselves to make it better." Allison went on to say that there were literally hundreds of design changes on the W11, and this includes a new front suspension, which offered a more aerodynamic opportunity, smaller side pods, and a big change in the rear suspension. So he went on to say that even though the regs haven't changed, what they've done is all about the details. So I mean, they really are taking something in what was a very, very good car in the W10 last year, and have really improved upon it. And to say that they were 2.6 seconds faster than Ferrari last week, you know, obviously doing different things at different times in testing, but that not saying, you know, that's being said, I mean, that is a very, very big gap. So interesting to say, I mean, the smaller side pods smaller side pods. There we go. This has helped to help the airflow in the area of the car. And again, it's just all these little things, you know, that take what is a very good car in the W10, improve upon it in a year when there aren't big technical changes. And you just know that everybody else is making changes to the car, refining the designs of last year. And it really does kind of come down to who makes the best changes on their designs or completely new design within the current regulations, as we've seen with other teams like Racing Point. And that was kind of a clever segue, and it was completely unintended, because looking at my notes now, that is actually the next item up, and we're going to talk about the RP10, which looks to be a very suspicious design. Looks very similar to the W10, the Mercedes cars of last year. But the FIA is being pushed to make sure that teams are not illegally sharing information between each other by rotating staff. I mean, I guess this is maybe one thing that's surprised me a little bit, but maybe not too much. But the Formula One in general is a bit of a small world, as you might expect. I mean, you know, the people that work in Formula One, the engineers, the designers, and all that. I mean, it's a small world, so you can see that the best of the best are going to make it into Formula One, and the best of those people are going to be highly sought after within the sport, within that community. And I'm sure that there is a fair amount of transition and people moving back and forth. But that really wasn't an issue until last week when we saw the RP10, the I keep calling them Force India, you know, habits die hard. Anyways, the RP10, the Racing Point car for this year, like I say, it looks very, very similar to last year's Mercedes. And I've seen a number of pictures where people have basically spliced images of the two cars together. And looking at it that way, I mean, it really is. I mean, they're not completely symmetrical, but you can see, you can see where the RP20 borrows heavily from that W10. Anyways, the Racing Point technical director Andy Green said, quote, "This bit really upsets us and still upsets us about what goes on is the transfer of information that can and does happen between the big teams and the small teams. This is circumventing the regulation. That's the big bit we don't like." You know, and again, this is not really a new discussion. It's kind of interesting that it's focusing really on Racing Point, because it's really gone back a couple of years, because ever since Haas came into Formula One several years ago, there's been a lot of discussion about that they've been a clone of Ferrari and stuff like that. And a lot of that debate and a lot of those questions were raised by Racing Point themselves. So now it's a little bit ironic that it's come back, and now that they are the team that's in the crosshairs on this issue. But it is interesting too, because when you hear some of the different perspectives out there, team principal at Red Bull, Christian Horner, he actually thinks that teams that are using what he calls clone cars in Formula One, he thinks that it might actually make the sport feels it might actually make Formula One better. Anyways, Horner had to say, quote, "I think collaborations do make sense. Otherwise, how do teams like AlphaTauri, Racing Point, Haas, and even Sauber or Alfa Romeo even compete? If they couldn't buy suspensions and gearboxes, all the R&D that they're going to have to conduct themselves will be big amounts of resource. Of course, some teams look like they've gone further in their cloning than others. But as long as it complies with the rules, I don't particularly have a problem with it. For Liberty, it creates a more competitive grid. For the teams, it makes Formula One more affordable. Of course, you don't want 10 cars that all look the same, but I think there's elements of the car that are transferable, like suspension and gearboxes, for example, that make a lot of sense," end quote. Yeah, so I mean, he is talking a little bit more about the hardware in the car. I mean, I think the big controversy, especially for the Racing Point, it's not so much parts that have been copied or borrowed from other teams inside of the car. It's the actual design of the car itself, and the similarity that it bears to the W10 that has really brought that discussion to the forefront. But it is interesting, because you have on one side, you have Christian Horner saying that as long as within the rules, he doesn't really have an issue for it. But you look at some different people, like Renault's executive director, Marcin Budkowski, and the quote is, "I think it's slightly concerning evolution for the sport. And it's a trend that started a few seasons ago and is a new chapter in that trend. I think for the FIA to decide whether it's fully compliant or not. So at this stage, I don't think I have any more to say," end quote. So yeah, I understand that quote from Budkowski completely, because on one hand, you have Horner that's saying, "Oh yeah, well it's no big deal as long as within the rules." But when you see the amount of borrowing that has gone on there, has that crossed a line? Yeah, perhaps maybe it has. But maybe it's not. It really does come down to a question of what do the rules allow at the end of the days. And I mean, if the rules allow that, then there's nothing wrong with it. It's just I think it kind of comes down to people's personal opinions on whether or not they think it's a good thing or a bad thing for Formula One. But on that, I think that as long as it's within the rules, I don't particularly have a problem with it either. But again, it depends how far it's going, this copying or cloning. And clearly Budkowski feels it's going too far, and it's crossed that line, and perhaps it's a time to rein it in. Anyway, so let's get away from the cloning issue now. I want to talk about several more things, and got a long ways to go here before we start to shut it down. So Alain Prost, who is a multiple world champion and has been involved with Renault for quite some time, he says that what he calls, quote, the stupid electric obsession leaves Formula One in a tough spot. And particularly, he is referring to moves by government to ban the sale of gas and diesel cars are really risking killing the European car industry. And then it will leave, because of that, it's going to put Formula One in a very difficult position, and they'll have to make some tough decisions. So Prost had to say, quote, I'm really upset what I see today with the automobile industry. We are going to give everything to the Chinese automotive industry, where in 10 years' time they're going to introduce their cars here, and that is what I don't like. I don't care because I'm not part of the industry, but I really hate that. It is stupid regulation. We are going to lose, I promise you, 1 million people, employees, in the next 10 years in the automobile industry if we don't change that. Today, if you have a big car with a diesel engine with the nice pollution filters, it should not be a problem. So, well, that is interesting. I mean, obviously, the internal combustion engine, that is eventually, that's going to be a thing of the past. You know, Prost obviously has some very strong feelings about that. The move to ban the diesel and gas powered cars. You know, here in BC, I mean, we are geographically a very large province within Canada, but our population is fairly small. I think we're about 5.5 million people, most of whom live in the Greater Vancouver area. So obviously, the province as a whole, you know, air pollution is not as big of an issue as other places. However, in a big urban environment and the urban sprawl that we have here in the Lower Mainland, they can be a problem, and it was a bit of a problem in the past. I mean, LA is one place that in North America that has had a bad reputation, or people will think of for pollution like that. I mean, Beijing obviously is has been one that's been brought up over the years, and other big cities in developing countries around the world, and that would be expected. But even here, there has been some discussion that the provincial government wants to see a ban on gas and diesel powered cars by, I think, 2040 is the year that's been speculated upon. But I mean, nothing's been legislated or anything like that. I mean, more and more, and I'm sure this is no different to any other part of North America or Europe or anywhere else where electric cars are available. I mean, you see more and more all the time. I mean, even as recently as a couple of years ago, if you're driving down the road and you saw a Tesla, you know, oh, that's interesting. You don't see that every day. But now, I mean, electric vehicles of so many different brands, I mean, you see them all the time now. And it really is, it is amazing to see just how many of them that they are out there. But again, you know, you go from one type of technology to another. Obviously, electric cars don't, admit, air pollution in that way, but it provides challenges on another front. I mean, electric cars have batteries, much like your phone or any other electronic device, batteries run out and they need to be charged. So where's all that electric power going to come from? Anyways, that's a little bit different from what Prost is saying. He's really focusing on a different area that would be impacted should the European car industry suffer because of this move to ban gas and diesel powered cars. And he feels that it's going to affect millions of employees, and eventually it's going to kill the industry, and it'll be taken over by the Chinese manufacturers. So, complex issue. You know, there's no easy, well, you know, you can say, well, maybe they're going to need to step their game up, and obviously that is an easy answer to say without really diving into the issue in a lot more detail. But those are some strong words from multiple world champion Alain Prost. Anyways, just sticking on that slightly, the electrification issue is a it's really proving a bit of a complication to Honda's discussions with Red Bull. And well, I mean, right now they have a deal to stay with Red Bull up until 2021, but beyond that, they are complicated by what they call financial pressure on its parent road company because of the moves to electrification. Just building on what we were just talking about Alain Prost, global car manufacturers are in a very tough business conditions of the moment because of all the regulatory clampdowns on everything about gas and diesel power cars that they can sell. So all these different regulations and legislation are really pushing them towards electric vehicles, whether they want to or not. And the big problem there is there's a huge investment that's required from the monetary side, and the profit margins are a lot less than in the traditional gas and diesel power cars. And right in my notes here, there's governments around the world trying to outlaw the sale of new gas and diesel powered and hybrid engines by 2040 at the latest. So I didn't just pull that number out of the air. Sometimes I do, but anyways, that is out there. But Honda, they're only committed to stay in F1 until the end of next year, and they only extended that their engine deal with Red Bull and AlphaTauri just by a single season. But again, it is not the main focus of Honda. Honda basically make road cars and trucks and motorcycles, and Formula One is not financially viable because for whatever reason that might be. Maybe it's costing too much. Maybe they're not winning, but maybe the money needs to go elsewhere in the company. And that is exactly what Masashi Yamamoto, who's the managing director of Honda's F1 program, he said, quote, "We are speaking to Red Bull about the continuation after 2021, but the other thing we have to consider is the whole car industry is facing a very difficult situation because of electrification. Many companies have to invest a lot, so we have to kind of think about the business side and how efficient we can run the program. That's the point," end quote. Okay, so there we go. Let's talk now a little bit about winter testing. We're going to do so. Long show this week. I got a lot more material to cover. And actually, I think we're just going to take a quick break here. We'll take our final break here now, and we'll come back, and we'll devote the rest of the show to winter testing and some silly season news involving Valtteri Bottas and Danny Ricciardo. And we'll do that quickly after the break, so don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. All right, welcome back to the show. Yes, as I was saying just before the break, we are now going to talk about winter testing. Some of these times are going to blow you away. It's really quite astonishing. But going back to what we were talking about earlier in the show, just about some of the perceived reliability problems with the Mercedes power units, Williams, they're already on their third engine of winter testing so far. So they have had problem after problem with their Mercedes power units so far. I mean, this team has been through the ringer already. They've had so many problems. I mean, they were several seconds off of the pace last year. Nicholas Latifi, the rookie, was saying that not all the problems have been solved with the FW 43, their car for this year, even though that there are definitely some positive signs. But again, when you're having issues with the power unit, and that's a big one, it's really limited the amount of testing that they can do, the amount of laps that they've been able to put in. And the recurring engine problems were described a little bit more by a rather lamentful Claire Williams. That is a quote, "We have had some engine problems which have been a little frustrating. We're on our third engine issue now, which has obviously cost us quite a lot of track time, which is unfortunate. I suppose it is what can happen in testing, and at least it's not our issue that something has gone wrong with the car. Apart from that, it's gone well. We're covering the run program as well as we can with the limited mileage that we've got. I would be happier if we've had some more miles under our belt, I suppose," end quote. So yeah, you know, that has got to be very frustrating for Williams. I mean, last year, embarrassingly, they showed up unprepared several days late to testing, and that they just got off to the season on the wrong foot, and it never really got any better for them from there. I mean, the design concept they had on the car was just not good, and it was just terrible. But I mean, they were there on time. They're much more prepared this year compared to where they were 1 year ago, and they were really enjoying a fairly strong first couple of days at the first test last week, and then they've had a number of setbacks since then. So the problems that they are having with their power units are currently under investigation by Mercedes. And, you know, so we'll find out what it is. He said, or sorry, Williams had to say that she felt that there was an issue with the MGUH on Thursday last week. Then there was a sensor issue on Friday that was on the Williams side. And but that, I mean, they only set them back for a half an hour, an hour at most. And so it's a very minor to that. But some of the first assessments that they've had with the problem was an oil pressure issue. And so they sent those engines back, or that engine back to Brixworth, to the engine factory, to Mercedes, and they'll have a chance to look at it in a little bit more detail. Now, this is something that was a real surprise, and that is Robert Kubica, reserve driver at Alfa Romeo, out of a race seat at Williams this year, but still in Formula One's reserve driver. He was the fastest driver at testing on Wednesday, and on Thursday, pardon me, he set a time in the Alfa Romeo with a 116.942, doing 53 laps, followed by Max Verstappen about 0.4 of a second off. Max running 84 laps in the Red Bull, he set a fastest time of 1:17.347. Sergio Perez, now he was third fastest in the Racing Point RP20, set a time of 1:17.428, running 84 laps just like Max, and not very far off of the pace there, only about a tenth of a second. Danny Kvyat and Pierre Gasly, fourth and fifth fastest on Thursday in the AlphaTauris, setting a time of about 1:17.5 respectfully. Then Alex Albon sixth, Lewis Hamilton, Lance Stroll in the second Racing Point, and Valtteri Bottas in the second Mercedes, and Sebastian Vettel rounding out the top 10, and Vettel setting a time of 1:18.113, running 84 laps. Bottas, not that much quicker, only about a hundredth and a half second. Bottas's fastest time in, out of 90 laps was a 1:18.1. So very, very surprising to see Robert Kubica at the very top of the charts there. I mean, you look at his teammate in comparison, Kimi Raikkonen, was 18th fastest out of 19 cars that tested on Thursday. His best time in 51 laps was a 1:19.5. So quite a bit off the pace of Kubica's 1:16.942. So that was quite a surprise to see that. But interestingly, just to build on that, Kubica feels that Alfa Romeo still has quote something more in the pocket. So Kubica elaborated on that, saying, quote, "I think we have something in the pocket, and we definitely have some new parts coming. So that's quite optimistic. We actually did improve a few areas where we struggled last week, where my feeling and actually all the drivers' feelings were that we have to improve, and actually the reaction was very good, very quick. So still a bit of optimization, I would say, but it's nice to see that when the team is reacting quickly and trying to give value to what you say. So hopefully we will be able to improve. Definitely there are different problems, different things to do, and we still have more performance in our car," end quote. So very interesting. We'll have to keep an eye on Alfa Romeo. Again, when it is testing, you got to take everything with a pinch of salt. We don't really know what everybody is, what they're all doing. We're, you know, moving on from Alfa Romeo, another team that's been doing pretty good is the Racing Point. And Sergio Perez said that the RP20 is the best car that he's ever had in Formula One. And he said, quote, "I think, yes, I think this can be the most solid package I've had in my career to start the season," end quote. Sticking with the Racing Point, what with Lawrence Stroll and his consortium buying a major stake in Aston Martin, and the team being rebranded as an Aston Martin's work team for next year, in 2021. Well, that is next year. Gosh, I'm stuck in 2019. Anyways, it'll be what he's calling true integration, which will be beneficial for both sides, both the Formula One and for the road car company. So team principal Otmar Szafnauer had to say, quote, "It should be great. It's a win-win. It should be beneficial for both sides. I mean, we're going to become a works team with a fabulous fabulous name. And Aston Martin will get some trickle-down technology from F1 and some technology transfer. First and foremost, we've got a nice tunnel, wind tunnel in Brackley that they can use. We've got aerodynamicists that they can tap into as well. And I'm sure there will be other technologies that will trickle down into road cars. We make things really like stiff, which helps make a race car, and it also helps a performance road car. So there will be areas that will help their sports cars. I look forward to that, end quote. So interesting to see. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do. I mean, Racing Point, a team that's really been brought back from the brink. I mean, they were almost, they really were on life support in their last their last days there when Vijay Mallya, former team principal of Force India, had the team wrested away from him after went into administration. And all credit to Lawrence Stroll and his partners to step up, put the money into the team. I mean, all the cynics out there say, oh, he's just put his money in there just so Lance is somewhere to drive. And that will be interesting to see if he can stick in Formula One. I mean, there's been a lot of speculation that the car that he had last year was designed more for Sergio Perez and didn't suit him at all. So a year on, we will have to wait and see. I mean, he wasn't up there at the top of the timesheets compared to his teammate, but he was in the top 10. And well, I guess one of the best indicators out there as to how good you are is how you not only match up with your competition, but how close you are to your teammate. Anyways, moving back to Red Bull, apparently them and Honda are targeting no engine penalties in 2020, which is a very lofty. That's a very lofty goal to aim for. And the one thing is that there's a lot of optimism and positivity about the reliability of Honda's power unit for this year. But Masashi Yamamoto, the managing director of Honda F1, said that they have a schedule and they're going to try and follow the allocation without penalty. I mean, it seems most teams deal with that from occasion from time to time. And, these engine penalties really can affect somebody's weekend. You see somebody have a very good qualifying and then have to, change something out in the power unit for one reason or another. And then have to incur all those penalties and drop right down to the grid as a result. So we'll have to wait and see. Let's revisit that one. Let's come back at the end of November and see whether or not they can attain that. But that is a big goal to aim for. Anyways, Alex Albon, one of the Red Bull drivers, he said that this year's car, the RB15, last year's was a demanding car, in his words, for the drivers to master. But this year's car, the RB16, is feels more usable and is a step forward into the design from last year. So the RB16 last week set the 13th quickest overall time. So I mean, not really all that great, but again, take that with a pinch of salt. Anyways, Albon had to say, quote, "I definitely say it's more usable in terms you can really feel the car. I think there were always areas last year where we felt the car was a little weak in some places, but with Max and I, we have a quite similar feedback comments. So coming over the winter, it was kind of clear what direction we wanted to go in. Coming already straight into the first test, the car definitely feels better in them areas, so we've made a step forwards," end quote. And again, Ferrari, they're a bit of a question mark. Red Bull, without a doubt, last year, I mean, they may not have really set the world on fire, but it was a positive season, I felt, for them, both with the Honda engines and with the car themselves. Obviously, they have a very, very good driver in Max Verstappen. Looks like they've got another very good driver in Alex Albon. I mean, mind you, he had less than 10 races after coming up from Toro Rosso. So we'll have to see how he's able to do in a full season with Red Bull this year. But interesting comments that they feel quite positive about the car so far. Anyways, it seems a bit strange now to be talking about drivers' rumors and silly season and stuff like that. But it's out there. It's out there at the moment. And we'll I mean, it's nothing shocking, and these shouldn't really come as a surprise, but Danny Ricciardo says he will answer calls from rival teams, but he prefers to stay at Renault. And, well, that's a bit of an interesting one, considering some of the issues that that he's had. You know, Renault did not have a very good season last year since he's moved over from Red Bull at the end of 2018. I mean, it was difficult. I mean, Ricciardo has been mentioned as a possible move to Ferrari in 2021. It's been interesting that that his name has been mentioned as a potential replacement for Sebastian Vettel, which you could expect. But the more that time goes on, I mean, Ferrari themselves, Binotto said that they would like to keep Sebastian Vettel, but you can see why Ricciardo's name would be thrown out there. Not just with Ferrari, but anyone else. I mean, he is a good Formula One driver. Anyways, Ricciardo had to say, quote, I reiterated afterwards, I didn't get that off properly, quote, I'll say that again, I reiterated afterwards, probably the second part of that sentence, I will answer calls for sure, but most importantly, I want this to work. I don't want to feel like I've just come to Renault and just got away from Red Bull and then I'm looking for the next best thing. I really want to make this happen and make it work. Obviously, the step is getting more out of this year than we did last year, and hopefully getting enough out of it that the journey continues beyond my two-year contract. That's the ideal scenario. To talk about other what ifs and future here and there, it's still too early, end quote. And I think that, at least publicly, I mean, he's saying all the right things. I mean, if he was just to stay there and jump at the first opportunity, yeah, I mean, it would look a little bit like he was just used that as a convenient out to get away from Red Bull when obviously that team was focusing more on Max Verstappen. But again, on the other side, I mean, Renault haven't been able to really step up and deliver to this point. Again, it was only one season that he's been with him, so you know, that one season is one season. I mean, they've been saying all the right things, Renault, that is, for this year, and that they've turned things around. They're going to have a better year, but again, we won't know until the season gets underway and this becomes serious. So, you know, Ricciardo, that's definitely one to watch, but certainly it's, you know, at least publicly what he's saying, he wants to stay there, make it work, and you can see why he would want to. I mean, if he was going to Ferrari or even to Mercedes, he would be second fiddle to Lewis Hamilton and probably even Charles Leclerc. I mean, Charles has signed a long-term contract to, was it 2024, 2025? I can't remember if I get the length of the contract between him and the deal that Max Verstappen signed with Red Bull over the winter. He's there till 2024. I think Charles 2025. Either way, I mean, it's a long-term contract, and both those teams are really committing to those young guys. Lewis Hamilton, I mean, Lewis has gotten to that point, I think, that as long as the dollars and cents make work out for him in any renegotiation with Mercedes, he's going to stay there. And I think that obviously what he's done and what he's still able to do, I mean, the guy's obviously the best driver of this generation, one of the best of all time. I mean, when he's still on top of the game, on top of his game, I think he has the right to walk away on his own terms, on his own timetable as well. Anyways, that's why I think that regardless if potentially if a move to Ferrari or Mercedes were to happen for Danny Ricciardo, that he would be the number two driver. Whereas, you know, in a team like Renault, I think there's more potential, more opportunity that if he gets things right, that he could be the big dog over there. Anyways, moving over from Ricciardo at Renault, we're going to talk now about Valtteri Bottas and Mercedes, and he wants the contract talks to be more expedited, and he wants them to be more internal, and he doesn't want to drag out contracts and negotiation with Mercedes for a new deal for 2021, and he said he felt there was what he called too much unnecessary talk outside of the team last year. But you know, it's interesting because since he went there after 2016, it's always been on a one-year deal, and he gets like a one-year contract extension, and I think, you know, that's all fine for him to say that he wants these talks to be expedited and more internal, but I don't know if he's really in a position to really demand that. I think it's fair that he can expect that, but I don't know if that's going to come to happen for him. I mean, he's been a good driver for them, but compared to you know, Nico Rosberg, Nico won more races, and you know, he was, I mean the big problem with him was the clash that he had with Lewis Hamilton. I mean, that was like a perpetual thing, whereas Bottas has come in. I mean, he's been completely opposite to Nico Rosberg in that regard, that you know, he gets along very well with Lewis Hamilton, almost to the point that he's in what I like to jokingly call the Hamilton friend zone, whereas Rosberg wasn't afraid to go out there and smash things up and really mix it up and you know, taking Hamilton off the track, if that's what it took, which is not correct either. But Bottas to me seems a little bit too docile. But again, we haven't really seen too many situations where the two of them have had too many opportunities to really race to one another. But I mean, Bottas always moves over when ordered to. You know, I mean, he is the ultimate team guy. I mean, he's obviously delivered enough wins. I think he's what, 7 career wins now, and lots of podiums. So they've continued to win the Constructors' Championship over the past couple of years since he's been there. But at the end of the day, you know, maybe they're looking for something more. Maybe they want somebody that can they can look to the long term, that is going to maybe be that guy that that can come in and maybe eventually take over from Lewis Hamilton. I mean, it's not going to be Max Verstappen. I mean, he's at Red Bull for the long term. It's not going to be Charles Leclerc. He's going to be at Red Bull for the long term. So maybe that's going to be the one of the deciding factors in whether Valtteri Bottas gets to stay at Mercedes beyond this year. It's maybe not so much that that he's not getting the job done, but maybe they want to get somebody else in there that's going to be able to get the job done down the road somewhere and still be able to deliver the what they need right now to continue this domination and a string of Constructors' Championships that they've been winning each and every year since 2014. Anyways, just a couple of final notes here before we shut it down. Fernando Alonso has announced that he's going to be reuniting with McLaren to race at the Indy 500 in May of this year. So this is going to be his third try to win the 500. And that will be the third part of the Triple Crown. I mean, he's already won Monaco, he's already won Le Mans, and well, he's won both of those events on two occasions each. So he would be the only driver to do it since Graham Hill won the Triple Crown back in the 1960s. Anyway, so Alonso drove for McLaren's F1 team on two occasions, obviously way back in the early 2000s, back in 2007, and then in a very underwhelming stint from 2015 to 2018, and then at the end of 2018, he walked away from the Formula One, left the door open. But I mean, he's been very out there over the past several years, saying that he wants to win the Indy 500. And when you're that close, I mean, he's already won the Formula One World Championship twice, be it a very long time ago now. I mean, it's going back 2005, 2006, already 15 years ago. I mean, he left that door open, but whether or not there'll be any takers to bring him up on that, that's something completely different. But he will be back. I mean, last year he wasn't able to qualify. He did very well, I thought, in his debut at Indy in 2017. I mean, he was out there. He was leading the race for a while, and he was up there with the front runners. But ultimately, it was an engine failure that ended his that afternoon. So I mean, it was disappointing from that debut, but it was even more disappointing. He wasn't able to qualify last year. So Fernando going to be back at the 500 in a couple of months from now. So that will be another thing we'll have to keep our eyes on. Anyways, this is it. I'm starting to run out of steam here. Long show this week. We're pushing now an hour and 20 minutes, but had to get through all of that. And hey, that's the fun part. That's a fun thing. And that's why we do what we do. And that's why we love Formula One. Anyways, thank you very much for downloading and listening to the show. If you want to do us a solid and help us, and it doesn't take anything much. It's just a little bit of investment of your time. Certainly not in this to make any money, so we don't require any financial help. So if you want to help us out, easiest way to go over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you download and enjoy your podcasts, and leave a 5-star rating and review. It certainly would be most appreciated, and we're grateful for all of you's that have already done that on our behalf. Anyways, if you want to get in touch with me with any feedback, any comments, or you just want to say hi, do so on Twitter at ScuderiaF1Pod or send me an email at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. That's it, guys. That's a wrap. I've got nothing left in the tank. It's vapors. It's getting late here. So that's it. We'll talk to you guys again soon. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.